Fight!
Welcome once again to New Game Plus. This is a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
And my name is Nolan.
And this is episode number 93. My question for you guys is, how many friends do you have? For example, do you have one... or
I have
more.
Two. I have two.
Okay.
My two friends' names are Dustin and Kenny.
Okay.
And it's pretty much the only people I talk to, unfortunately. In fact, one of those friends is in the room with me.
It's
me?
It's Dustin. No, I'm hanging out at Nolan's today. Super fun. We got to do this recently, but back to visiting him at his home, and so we get to share a mic today, and I get to rub it in his face that I probably have more friends than he does.
Oh, well, here's the thing. People do friendships differently. Some people have few but meaningful friendships, and then some people have just tons and tons of pretty shallow friends. Which one are you, Kenny?
Oh, I'm a completely shallow person.
Right, we know that, but what about your friendscape? Like, do you have...
I tend to also be the, like, fewer and closer kind of guy in actuality.
Okay. I mean, I'm the exact same way. You guys know that. It's just few close ones, and then everybody else is an acquaintance.
Yeah, I would... I mean, I think I have a lot of friends, like work friends, and then our friends in Discord clearly are actually closer than a lot of other people I know in person. So... I have those, but then, like, yeah, two best friends, maybe, you know. And then in high school, it was a little different, but I just had, like, my best friend, Greg, and then we thought we were cooler than everyone, you know?
What Nolan's saying is that he really, really likes Bill.
They're best friends.
I never said that.
Friends, aka companions, are wonderful to have in life, but do you actually need 25 of them when you go into battle? We will quickly find that out in this episode as we talk about the game, Baldur's Gate.
Overview.
Baldur's Gate is a high fantasy role-playing video game that was developed by BioWare and published in 1998 by Interplay Entertainment, which, guys, those are big names.
That's Mass Effect, that's Knights of the Round, that's Knights of the Old Republic.
That's, yeah, Dragon Age.
That's Dragon Age. That's a big company. They do a lot of RPG.
That's BioWare. Interplay is responsible for Clay Fighter, Earthworm Jim, and what else? Oh yeah, Fallout.
Yeah, that's that. How did these two companies come together for this game? That's so surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, early on, right? So this is about 20 years ago. So kind of before these two companies were as huge as they were, but I mean, still big companies.
Absolutely. These are the kind of names that when you see them up front, you go, okay, this might be a pretty sweet week.
And so this game, obviously based on those names, was created for the PC. It was created to play on the computer. And to kind of just make this as simple as possible up front, this game is Dungeons and Dragons, like straight up.
Yes.
If that intimidates you, maybe stop here, because it really is.
Just turn off the episode here. We already got the listen count by you clicking play, so thank you very much. So as far as I know, but I don't want to assume, so I'm going to just ask the question. Have either of you guys played a real full game of D&D before?
Hang on. I know both of you have together.
No, but you, I just said a real full game.
No. A real full game? That takes like a long time. No.
Yeah, but people that actually... I'm saying, have you done more than just sit down and act like you're playing one time?
One time, I socialized with a group of friends who were that version of nerdy. And we spent an evening doing a campaign. I don't know if it was D&D or some other similar kind of system.
Right.
But the, you know, pen and paper, get out the dice, role play a pre-made scenario with a, you know, with a guild master, a dungeon master. I don't even know what you call these people. And so I can say yes, but barely. And then the little bit that you and I have dabbled when you went through that weird D&D online phase, Dustin, I don't think quite counts, but I had a lot of fun with it.
I don't think it quite counts either, but I don't know if I'd call it a weird phase, but you know,
it was weird. I watched the episode. It's actually still on your Twitch. Dungeons and Dragons has always appealed to me, and it's like totally my thing. I love board games, which, chill out, I'm not calling it a board game. I love RPGs, and so like I feel like I would really, really enjoy it if I played it with you guys, but it's such a time commitment that it scares me away every time.
I think I, out of all three of us, am just like ready to admit, like, I would like Dungeons and Dragons. Like, if I invested the time into, like...
Oh, certainly. Like, done well, it can be, the idea is great.
Yeah, well, because we've talked about this so many times, but one of the components or the main component that I like in video games is story, and Dungeons and Dragons is all about story. The mechanics
absolutely
lend to the story, and the everything else lends to the story. It, like, you don't even have graphics, right? Like, it's a story that's being made up and being told. So
listen, you got the best graphics card. You got your imagination.
Wow. Yes. So kids, if you're listening right now,
and that's free,
stop smoking pot and engage your mind. Play a game of D&D.
High fantasy, kids. High.
High. We put fantasy. The high in high fantasy.
Kenny, I'm same with you. Like, I've played a game. In fact, I've done it for a podcast recently yet to be released. But it wasn't Dungeons and Dragons, but it was a roll the dice and create a story. But outside of that, there's been no other relationship with D&D. That being the case, that all three of us didn't have a deep and working relationship with Dungeons and Dragons probably made the learning curve exponential in this game this week. Because as I said, and we'll get into that, but as I said, Baldur's Gate is a visual representation and an engine to play Dungeons and Dragons all by yourself.
Right, with a pre-done story and, you know, all of the things that wouldn't be as limited in an actual, you know, real life campaign, but it's the idea is to get as close to that as you can on a computer screen as a single player game.
So let me drop in the story real quick, and then we can move forward. Your character, whoever you create, a guy, a girl, an orc, a human, a dwarf, you know, you have complete control over who you create. But regardless, that character is the ward and adopted son or daughter of the mage Gorion or Gorion. He comes to you one morning and says, "We got to get out of here. You're in this little peaceful town, and he's been training you, but one morning he's been acting weird recently." And then he comes up to you and he's like, "We've got to go. Pack up your stuff. Here's some money. Buy some armor and a weapon, and we're leaving." And so you do that, and on your way out of the village, you're ambushed, and Gorion tells you to flee, and as you do, you look back over your shoulder and see that he is sacrificing himself and ultimately losing his life as you run away, because these people that attacked are not looking for Gorion, you find out, they're looking for you. And so your main character sets off to escape his or her pursuers, and in the process recruits this huge squad of team members, and then as fantasy stories do, the narrative opens up to this huge expansive world.
To set the stage up even more, there's like in the world, there's like this iron crisis going on that's kind of the overarching like scare going around. Like the iron that everyone uses is disintegrating and like disappearing. So that's a mysterious thing that you really, that's kind of like what you start exploring other than who was just trying to kill me.
Right. I like how they call that a crisis, as if that's a big enough word. In a like high fantasy kind of world where everything runs on like that sort of level of blacksmithing and technology, iron just starting to fail would be such a big problem. Like, I don't think the game freaks out enough about how bad this should be.
That's a big deal. BioWare, Black Isle Studios even involved, Interplay Entertainment, Dungeons and Dragons, high fantasy setting. All of this sounds like it could be the perfect recipe for an extremely interesting game. Let's find out what we thought about it this week.
Gameplay.
So a lot of the gameplay here, keeping Dungeons and Dragons theme in mind, is very text-based. Would you guys agree with that? Like, you're heavily into menus, and yes, there are graphics and it's a visual representation of the world and everything, but like, you're doing lots of reading and lots of menuing throughout the whole game.
Yeah, that's pretty true. I thought for me, as much as like navigating character screens and some of those things was intensive, the thing that stood out for me, like as a game mechanic, that I think is most important that we talk about is the weird like real time but still turn based kind of fight sequences, because the way combat works in this game is really unique. So like I said, it's turn-based in that each of your characters, depending on their stats, will have an action that they can do, you know, every so often. And they'll have actions that they default to, but a lot of other actions that you're going to want to manually tell them to do. Attack a certain person, cast a certain spell on a certain person, move over here, move over there, defend someone, use one of your special abilities, and to do that, you have to interrupt combat, basically, because as soon as combat starts, it goes real time. All of your people default to their defaults and will just like run to the closest person and start doing whatever it is their character is supposed to do. And so, unfortunately, that doesn't work well at all. You have to micromanage significantly more than that if you want to be successful in this game. And so what you're doing is you're pausing the game, giving basically a command or two to every single one of your people, and then resuming the game. Let all of those actions play out, and probably pausing the game again, making some different decisions, moving people around, changing the spells you're casting, and then resuming the game. And then, oh wait, someone took a critical hit because it's D&D, and while it didn't seem like they were supposed to take that much damage, dice are random, and so suddenly one guy's almost dead. Pause the game. Change everything you were just doing, resume it again. And it becomes a really, really weird, not turn-based, but not real-time, that's a little bit, for me at least, was a really frustrating way of interfacing with the battle system of this game.
And for you, it sounds not only frustrating, but unfamiliar. For me, it's very, very familiar. It's crazy how similar this game is in so many ways to Dragon Age. So I'm actually playing Inquisition right now, not as we're recording, but now in life. Thank you to Nolan for that gift.
Absolutely.
But and I just played 1 and 2 leading up to my Inquisition. A lot of the combat and the search features and the quest mechanics that are apparent and used often and perfected in these later Dragon Age games started here in 1998. That's not even just a guess. That's like, it's the exact, you can see the de-evolution from what I'm playing right now all the way back through time to Baldur's Gate and see exactly how these things started and how they connected. And so for me, it was very familiar, although still, yeah, somewhat limiting and a lot more pausing than you would have to do in these future games.
So we've jumped straight into the gameplay and the combat and some of that, but why don't we go through like setting up and beginning a game? Because if someone isn't familiar with D&D, the amount of detail that goes into character creation and how important that is may not be self-evident, but really took some time. What were you guys' experiences with that whole like setting up to play part of the game?
It takes a week just to get a character set up.
Yeah, like this is one of those games that a week to get an experience like we do for our podcast is very difficult. It's not just hopping and play. It's like literally you can spend a long time. Like one of your play sessions can be character building.
And you're not playing it wrong if that's the case. Like that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to take a lot of time planning.
Like
certainly.
You begin the game with character creation, and it's not just choosing what your character looks like or what kind of abilities he or she has. You can spend a long time deciding your race, your class, your alignment. You can even write out an actual in-text bio for your character. There's a lot of different things that you can do, and on top of that, sure, you can determine what your character's picture looks like, but also what color your armor is and the secondary color of your armor. There's so much to choose from.
I want to hear what you guys went for as far as like race, and then like the style of character you went for.
So I kind of played two different characters this week, which is generous because mostly I created one character and then got really, really frustrated with it because the game is difficult and like I just kept dying. Like my main character kept dying and I was like, okay, we're going to try this again a different way. And so I created a character that I spent a lot of time on and invested in and really felt like I'm going to live their story. And it was a halfling thief and it was going to be awesome. And I spent tons of time customizing every last little thing about them. And then the difficulty of the game and playing a more like skill-based kinds of character where you're supposed to be, you know, pickpocketing and moving in and out of fights and setting traps and doing things that were more complex just punched me right in the face. Like this game was not especially easy. And we were playing on like the normal setting. There's 3 or 4 settings of difficulty above that. And I was tempted at that point to almost go back and just play like the story mode or an easier setting, but the purist in me wouldn't let me. And so instead I went back and just created a really, really beefy half orc that was just a meat tank. I was like, I don't know if the game's going to be any fun, but I'm not going to die.
I'm glad I did a lot of research beforehand, because if you do just a little bit of searching of like what your first character should be, there's more articles on what you shouldn't be, and you should never start as a thief because it is very, very difficult to do so.
I should have done the same, because like Kenny, I also did a thief because that's my go-to in these types of games. But Here's why it's different in this case. I was a half elf, love elves, and then I did the fighter slash thief. So I like that this game has like multiple classes, kind of like where you can
multiple, but you can combine some of them.
You can combine them. Yeah. Which is great. I like that, and it doesn't keep you limited to one lane the whole time. But the reason it's different, so games nowadays where you create your character, race, their traits, they can still go into combat and just swing and win. You can usually do that. Like looking at Skyrim, you can be a thief, but you can still just go like slash people to death and be okay. Like Kenny said, as a thief in this game, you have to play a certain way. You have to role play as a thief really would, or you're going to lose. So,
which I respect
for sure.
I like the idea of that. Certainly, I really do. But for a first play, it was really punishing.
Yes, it's tough, but games in some capacity has become way too easy nowadays. And if you're a thief, you can win just as easily if you're a two-handed warrior. Like it doesn't matter what class you are. That in battle necessarily, it just kind of matters what you can wield and that's all. But in this game, if you are some of these, other kind of roles types, you have to protect yourself. You can't just run in there. You've got to stealth and then come in from a back attack while the enemy is already has their attention on one of your other party members. Like you've got to play it that way, and I really like that.
I respect it for sure. I like having to really get into the role. Like this game does justice to the whole D&D way of thinking and going about the game, and I really do think that Dungeons and Dragons fans at the time enjoyed the game probably because you didn't have to commit that time out. I mean, like you didn't have to sit down with friends, you know, on a Friday. You could do this. You could play this on your own. And I really do. I think BioWare stayed true to that. Out of the other games, out of the other modern games, like take Dragon Age. I think you do kind of have to. You do have to play a certain style. Like if you pick a thief, I remember playing through that game and having to always like sneak around the enemy and have to stab him in the back like a thief would. So yeah. BioWare is good at delivering on that, I think.
Yeah, they've developed it where you're stronger, like you're not just going to die as easily if you're one of those squishy characters. But and so just to make it a lot more palatable for a general audience today. But back here, they weren't spoon feeding you. Like it was tough, and especially so because, well, I didn't even share with you kind of what I created. I was a dwarf that was a half fighter and or warrior and half cleric.
Nice.
So after doing research, I found that that is kind of the most easy way to stay beefy, to use some good weapons, and then to be able to heal yourself even if things go south.
Yeah, that actually sounds like a really wise like intro to the game kind of beginning class. I wish I'd done some of that research. What you were saying definitely is true. This game does a great job of feeling like D&D, but I think almost too much. For me, they worked so hard at like the interface and the mechanics literally following what you could do in D&D that it sometimes changed things that I feel like if they were just making it as a game without that guidance, that they would have done differently. And to me, it put up a couple of barriers to accessibility that were really frustrating.
Again, I think I have to respect it though. Like, they said they wanted to make a D&D game, a video game, and they did. Like, the level of immersion there, even with the difficulty present, I think is definitely satisfying, especially to someone who's into that kind of stuff. And this was 98, so like, I think it's pretty impressive that they could build a game with and pack that much into it. And I get maybe the lack of information going into it. Like, if you're not a D&D player, then it's probably going to be really hard. But I still have to respect it, because like, if you spend the time to learn it and then to just jump in, I mean, I think there's still some fun to be had there.
Well, here's the thing that makes it tough. And Kenny, I get what you're saying. So depending on which version of D&D you're playing, if you grab the rule book and you actually kind of just, if you wanted to walk through page by page and not just use it as a resource for when you have a question, you're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages. Like, the rules and the world is so robust that there's just so much to it, from character creation to battle mechanics and everything in between. And so when they try to translate that to this video game, it's felt. And so the mechanics here are expansive. And in my opinion, this is one of the highest learning curves of any game we've ever played.
Yes, and not just a high learning curve, at which they do a pretty good job of giving you a fairly basic, I mean, a tutorial of kind of the basic things you'll need to know that's fairly in-depth, rather. But the complexity is still there, you know, where like inventory management and just casting a spell and things that should be able to be done pretty easily, because it's sort of fitting into this structure, instead of them like adapting the structure to what would make a good video game, to me just had more frustrating moments than rewarding moments. I felt like I was spending more time learning how to function in this game and live in this universe than I really was sort of getting into the story and just jumping in and playing the game.
Well, and on top of that, it's an option, so I doubt that y'all did this, but you can even turn on your dice roll information so that it's showing in your text box while you battle. Like,
I wish I had, because there were some things that happened that I was like, I know there's math behind this, but I don't get it. Like, at one point, I had a party, a full party. Like, you're only allowed, I don't know, six people in the party at a time, though you meet tons and tons of people. But I had a group of people that had surrounded this enemy, and they were hacking away for, like, literally minutes straight. And we never hit them, and they never hit us.
Yeah.
It was just miss, 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 miss. And it felt so unrealistic. I wanted to, like, see the math there. Was, you know, did I get weird dice, or was this someone who was just really elusive but didn't deal any damage? And so again, the mechanic kinds of things that are fine and work well when you're sitting down playing D&D, expanding your imagination, just made for, again, in my mind, clunky video game gameplay.
One of the things that is relatively unique in this game, I mean, you get it in some of the other things, like you feel this some in Knights of the Old Republic, and RPGs just in general often have like, are you a good guy or are you a bad guy? But in Baldur's Gate, you've got this alignment and it really comes into play. Maybe you, not within the first hour, you're not going to notice it unless you like just go around and slaughter the town cows. Like, but being evil or a certain kind of evil restricts you from certain activities and certain party members, as being good does the same in reverse. It opens up different dialogue options. It allows you to go down different paths within the narrative a little bit. So I really like that this early on that they are allowing you really, really, really to roleplay this character so much so that it affects other decisions that you try to make in the game.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that. I mean, again, we only spent a week with it, but like that's really impressive to me.
Yeah.
I always appreciate that. When you're like affecting the greater world around you by the things you do, that's roleplaying. I love that level of immersion.
Aged.
I think this game, when we're looking at how it's aged over the years, which, how many years is that? 20?
Almost 20, yeah.
Almost 20 years. It, to me, just playing it a week is not enough. So just, I want people listening to know, clear, we understand that this is not a play it for a week and then talk about how you're an expert on it. We know that, like, there's so much that we haven't experienced. There's so much that we need more time with. But we think we've, you know, been able to form our general idea of what the game is. I just wanted to say that before we go forward. But for me, just playing it this week, it really separates the RPG fans from the RPG fans. Like, the ones that really, really want to abide by, like, the rules of immersion. And those who just want a casual, like, fantasy gaming experience.
And you think it's some of the aging factors that did that, or what?
I do. I think where we are now with this genre is a very accessible RPG fantasy experience. And I think that's good. That's fun. You can just pick up Skyrim, and pretty much anyone could find some enjoyment in that, I think. Not everyone, but you know what I mean. Someone looking for that experience. This game, though, I feel like 80% of those people would put it down during character creation or right after. And it's not like the graphics that I'm speaking to. It's just how they designed this game, and it's how they meant to. It's not because it's just so old now. This is how they meant for it to be played.
Yeah, certainly. I think it's a style decision, and not one that really changes if you were going for the same kind of thing today. But the size of the world, the amount of side quests you can do, the detail you can immerse yourself in, I have a feeling, and started to get this a little bit already in our short time of play, but I feel like this is one of those games that the more you immerse in it, the more you know it, the longer you play it, the more you would be enjoying it as your characters grow and get more things to do. But getting to that point initially, especially with as short a time as we had to play, was tough for me. It's worth pointing out that I believe we all played the enhanced edition of this game, which I don't know exactly what all was changed, but I think even went back and tightened up and cleaned up some of the graphics and kinds of things. And so it was great that they made this game more accessible in terms of how it's aged, because it's a classic game, however popular or unpopular it is with different people.
So, yeah, Enhanced Edition, I know that kind of puts some kinks in things, especially in regards to our podcast, because, guys, I don't even know if you guys know, but that came out only 5 years ago.
Really?
So that's not retro by any means.
No, but the gameplay is all exactly the same. It is that old game, just with a little bit fresher skin and everything, a little bit more, again, playable on a modern system and all of those important things.
A lot of, honestly, some of the reviews when it came out was to the effect of, is there anything that's changed? So it made me comfortable playing it this week, because I knew that the enhanced edition mainly was bug fixes, and then it was, here's a little bit of a covering of clothing to put on the old game while still maintaining the old game completely.
Yeah, I like that they didn't try and go super like remaster with it or whatever. And surprisingly, we find doing this podcast, old PC games just don't run anymore. on newer consoles, which kind of seems a little counterintuitive, but
I know.
Anyways, I really appreciate it when companies do this, and I didn't realize that it only came out 5 years ago, but that's great. It still felt retro. It felt like I was playing the original, but like my eyes weren't bleeding. So
it still feels like even the look and the sound. I mean, it still feels old. Like me saying that it came out in 2012 for all of us is like, whoa, like
right.
What?
This isn't the StarCraft HD remaster. This isn't, you know, a rewrite update of the game. It's let's take this classic that people can't really play anymore and let's make it accessible to them again. That's all it really
did. The game might not look 98, but it looks 99, you know,
yeah.
with the enhanced edition. So let me make a few aged notes before we conclude this section. It was way too much text, and it was nice to have some voiceovers, which were not bad, by the way. I mean, they were corny at times and ham-fisted.
I liked them.
But I think they did well, and it was good to not have to read every single thing. But just so much text. And then with any RPG, you're going to have to grind and to be able to get your levels. And it's somewhat always grueling. But for me in Baldur's Gate, it became impossibly slow. And so as soon as you get out of Candle Keep, which is kind of just your first area, which is more of a tutorial stage, and you go out into the woods, which you spend a majority of time trying to clear the fog of war, and it opens up story and characters and fighting and battles. The grinding to level up and to actually survive out there is impossibly slow in this video game. But one of the things that I feel aged extremely well is that in the even creation of this game, there is great variety in the locations you go. There's cities, castles, forests, caves. There's a lot of diverse enemies. Yes, there are way too many companions that you can have. As I mentioned earlier, I think up to, if not more than 25, which is just
right.
Way too much.
Not at a time, but like to choose from.
And you don't get them all right away. They do well with kind of revealing them to you as the time goes. And you're not going to have access to every single one based on your alignment and decisions you make. However, 25 is a lot to choose from. You can also look at that saying, hey, there's a lot of different ways that you can go about playing this game. And so I think that there are a lot of things that did age well, especially if you're playing this enhanced edition.
And one other thing that we have to talk about when we're talking about what makes this game work or not is how story-driven this game is. And the great thing about a story is that however it's portrayed, like a story is a story. If it's enjoyable, boom, you can get into it no matter what the graphics look like, no matter how much between story elements it's taking you clicking a million little buttons to try and do one simple thing. The fact that they wrote a good story and gave you the diversity of characters to be played different ways and have your actions affect the world is just always welcome. And that's timeless. And that piece of this game, I think they did a pretty good job on.
Now, as always in our age section, we want to be able to share with you kind of just the legacy that it left and how to be able to play it today if you would like to. This game, Baldur's Gate, has been released and re-released numerous times throughout the years, along with a sequel, Baldur's Gate 2, which I actually just got an email this morning that GOG is doing a sale right now on some of these old school RPGs.
Nice.
And so Baldur's Gate 2 has dropped down by 67%. So if you want to play a slightly enhanced edition of Baldur's Gate, then maybe you want to check out Baldur's Gate 2.
I am 80% sure that somebody that works at GOG follows our podcast, because we have had numerous times that we're like, hey, we're playing this game, and then like it's randomly on sale or cheaper that week. I don't know. Maybe conspiracy theories, but if you work for GOG and you love listening to this podcast, because I know you're out there, hook us up. We'll do some advertising for you.
Kenny, no one listens to our podcast.
You and I do, Nolan.
Bill.
And Bill.
And Bill, yeah.
Also, Baldur's Gate Enhanced Edition can be found on GOG or Steam. It's very easy to get a hold of and actually play, which is a good thing because, like Nolan mentioned, PC games from back then, hard to play nowadays.
The final shell shock.
Guys, do you give this game, Baldur's Gate, your vote for new game plus status? Our simple thumbs up or thumbs down for this game. Do we suggest our viewers go find a copy and play it, or to reserve their game time for some other retro game? We require 2 out of 3 of our votes to swing one way or another. Nolan?
Yep. I love how well written it is. It's kind of old. What is that style called of writing? I don't know, ye old.
Kind of like old English.
Old English, yeah, whatever. It's really well written. And if you go read the story, like you can go read the plot and the story. I mean, there's clearly spoilers, but it's actually a really good story, I thought. I really, really enjoyed how it was telling your story. And clearly you're making decisions throughout there to make things happen. So that's a big deal in a game like this. Going into this, I was like, I don't know about D&D. It's a little intimidating. This is probably just going to be a virtual mistake. But I loved the way they were telling story. I love menuing, and I love looking at complex looking like stats and stuff. I think that's the Fire Emblem player in me. And I also am okay with 25 people that follow you, or that
that's
can,
the Fire Emblem,
because
in
that's the Fire Emblem in me, and so none of those things like turn me off. In fact, I am blown away by the options you're given and the replayability. This, yeah, I give this game new game plus. I think everyone Whoa. Should play it. It is a great representation of telling your own story in a video game, and honestly, I would struggle coming up with modern games that pulled it off like they did in this one.
That took me by complete surprise.
Well, I'll live on the other side of the table for just a minute. Baldur's Gate doesn't get New Game Plus from me. I love that they tell story. I love character creation. Some of the depth is welcome, but there were too many hiccups for me in terms of mechanics and playability. I felt like I was spending more time learning the game and struggling through how to do it without failing than I was really immersing into all of those things that they did well. And there were just too many of those hurdles for me. And so I get how there are certain people who would really like this game. And if you're that person and like old games, it maybe is worth checking out. But for most people who just want to go check out some old games and see if they're worth playing today, I think this one's going to be more headache than enjoyable. It's those little things that keep me from giving it New Game Plus, even though there's some good elements as well.
I rarely get to be the determining factor, so I'm relishing in this moment. And honestly, this is a tough game for me to give or to revoke. Like, I don't know. I haven't known which way I was going to lean as I was playing, because I enjoyed the game a lot, but I was used to some of these mechanics from other BioWare games. And so, and I'm somewhat familiar with D&D. So for me, it was somewhat manageable, but for those of you that are not, this will be a hard pill to swallow initially. It really will. However, if you stick to it, I believe and experienced that Baldur's Gate is really a treasure trove that continues to give more and more and to grow more and more the deeper that you go. And so I do give it my vote for New Game Plus status. And nice. That's 2 out of 3, meaning that Baldur's Gate does receive our New Game Plus seal of approval.
Here's the deal. Dustin, you need to jump into some emails, because I got to find that at least one of our viewers knew what was up and struggled with this game enough to give people fair warning that even though it is now a New Game Plus certified game, they know what they're biting off.
Well, let's see. We got an email from Antonin this week, and he said, "Dear hosts of NGP, I pose a question to you. Were you nerdy enough to play D&D when you were younger? I know I was, and while I have no friends to play with now, I'm still a fan."
Oh, no.
I don't think he means no friends, just no friends to play with. "Back in 1998, when Baldur's Gate first came out, I had no idea what D&D was, and that's okay. The game fascinated me from the first time I read about it, and here I am 19 years later, finally playing it. One of the first things that stood out to me about Baldur's Gate was the artistic style. I found the isometric view very comfortable. Another thing that stood out to me was the gameplay. I expected Baldur's Gate to be an action RPG, and I quickly realized that it was not. In fact, it was a very strategy based RPG that involved a lot of thinking and planning facilitated by the pause screen. The story started simple enough, as stories start, and it hooked me pretty quickly as I embarked on several side quests almost immediately, even before the main story began. I liked that the side quests ranged from silly errands to full-on missions. Overall, I was surprised how much I did like the game and even the turn-by-turn real-time hybrid gameplay, which I usually suck at. I hope you all liked it, and I wish I had more time to dive deeper into this RPG.
Here's the deal. Apparently, all He's of you guys wrong. Think I'm wrong, but if you like a game where you're... characters can't even hand inventory items from themselves to each other within your party, but you got to take equipment off and drop it on the ground and manually have one of your other party members come in and pick it up, then maybe this is the game for you.
Oh, poor Kenny. You didn't find out how to just drag an item over to the character picture on the right side of the screen?
It's not an intuitive game.
It's not. Look, give you that. It's not intuitive, but there's usually always a way.
Antonin hit some good points that we should have, and we're bad at our jobs. The isometric view, I agree. I think it's a great way to display the world and the graphics, but also you can also easily navigate it. And the fact that you said that it's more of a strategy RPG makes total sense too, because the battle system, when you look at it from that angle instead of a hack and slash turn-based, it is very strategic. It takes a lot of planning, so yeah. I wish I had more time with it too. I think I might keep on going, or I might make a new character because I'm having trouble with the thief.
Antonin did a really cool thing this weekend. He streamed some of his initial, like he did a first play, like we would typically do. And so he linked that in our Discord, and it was a lot of fun to watch him go through and create a character and have these first experiences with the game. So if you're into that, go join us on our Discord and check out Antonin's VODs. We got another email from Holden, and I love how his email begins. I didn't get the chance to play Baldur's Gate this week, but I watched several videos of other people playing. I hope that counts.
Meh.
And then he said, the game looks incredible. It reminds me a lot of RuneScape, which is a game that I played a lot as a kid, and I loved it. So I hope it does get approval.
I got a little bit of that, too. I didn't mention that, but early days of RuneScape... Yeah, I get that.
It has that like vibe and aesthetic, but I think plays really differently.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for your emails. Any week, if you would like to include your thoughts or commentary on a game that you played with us that week, or a game that you have fond memories or terrible memories of from your past, feel free to email us at ngppodcast@gmail.com, and we'd love to include your thoughts as a part of our show next week.
Especially if you disagree with Kenny.
This week, we are not going to randomly select. I know, Kenny, sad day, right? However, it's a good reason. We have a special guest joining us next week for our episode. And this guy's name, he goes by Thatch. And he is the host of the Pokemon Underground Champions League, or Puckle, which is a website, a community, and a podcast that has been going on for almost a decade now, and it is about all things Pokemon.
I think this is the most hype I've ever been for an episode.
So the game that we're going to play is Digimon.
Never mind.
So the game that we're going to play with Thatch, that he decided for us to play and then talk about with him, is thematically approved. It is... going back to the first generation, the one that started it all, we are playing Pokemon Red Blue.
Which one are you going to play?
Purple.
Am I correct that it's just a difference in some of the Pokemon that are available?
Yes. There's yellow version, which I think should not be
qualified. That came out
a
year or two later.
Okay, but even besides that, like, there are other things that are in that game that are not
right.
in the other.
It's much more like the anime, right? Yellow? Yes.
Yeah, and like...
You're Ash, and you have Pikachu, yes.
Follow you, yes.
Yeah, so red or blue, it doesn't necessarily matter which one you pick up. I think... I'm trying to remember which one I played as a kid, and I want to go back to that one. Not as though it's going to matter, because it's literally, I think, like 6 to 8 Pokemon that are different in each.
It's not a big difference at all. Like, I played Red growing up, so that's the one I'm going to go for.
We had both. I think I played one, brother played the other. Anyways, Pokemon Red and Blue, play with us this week. It's going to be a whole lot of fun.
As we're winding down our episode, we got to take a minute to thank all of our patrons and the community that supports us. You guys, by playing games, sending in emails, supporting us on Patreon, especially our producers who just go above and beyond in engaging and supporting us, Zion, Bradley, Gimbarino. Thanks to all of you guys. You are the second best reason to do this podcast. The first best being that old games are awesome and we get to play them.
We have a Discord. It's a lot of fun. We talk a lot. There is an invite link to it on our Twitter. It's the easiest way to go get that. You don't even have to install it. There's a browser version. Come in there. Talk with us about Pokemon. This would be a great week to jump in and share your thoughts because I know you all played Pokemon. Don't lie to me.
We better get at least a dozen emails this week. Yeah, because Pokemon. Come on, Pokemon.
At least a dozen.
You can follow us on social media this week, Facebook and Twitter at NGP Podcast. You can listen directly on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Music, or any other podcast provider of your choice. Make sure that you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. Join us next week as we play Pokemon Red, Blue. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm not planning on playing Pikachu.
And I'm Nolan.
And this has been New Game Plus.